Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. Love, sex, money, and personal power. For many on a spiritual path, reconciling such earthly physical and emotional needs, drives, and desires with the aspiration to live a more conscious, awakened life can cause much internal conflict. In a world that appears to be devolving at a breathtaking rate and knee-jerk reactions based in fear, defensiveness, and just judgment are becoming increasingly rife, how do we balance the practical preoccupations and concerns that we all face as humans with living, loving and responding from the heart and soul of our higher awareness? How can we learn to live more fully and authentically as our true selves? Lee Harris is an intuitive medium, transformational leader, musician and visual artist. In 2004, he began holding channeling sessions and readings in his home. Today, his work reaches hundreds of thousands around the planet through his videos, audio recordings, writings, workshops, and online events. Lee Harris joins me tonight to talk about his newly released book, Energy Speaks, Messages from Spirit on Living, Loving, and Awakening, in which he distills the wisdom of a group of non-physical entities, collectively known as the Z's, into a concise and eminently practical guide for breaking free of limitations and transforming our lives. Lee, welcome.
Sandy, hi. It's great to be here. And by the way, when you said at the beginning of the show, love, sex, money, personal power, and you were referring to the book, I was like, oh, I'm Jackie Collins. This is great. This isn't quite... But you're right. Those are some of the big topics in the book, yep.
They are indeed. Well, and they're the biggest topics for human kind, aren't they? Let's face it, we cannot escape them. Well, first of all, let me say congratulations on the new book. You've put a lot of work into it, and I'm not just talking about the writing of it. You know, what hit me as I was reading it is the years of channels, the seminars, the workshops, and your own self-growth through that period as well. How did you feel putting it all together, revisiting those seminars and channels and experiences of over a decade ago?
Well, firstly, thank you. I'm glad it comes off that way. And you know what's funny is kind of like much of my work, I wasn't pushed into putting this book out there, but let's say I wasn't like the person leading the charge. So I'm so heartened by how people are experiencing it. We were supposed to do another book, and it was a book that was going to be in my words. It was going to be a very practical spiritual book, and it may still appear, but it just wasn't working. So what happened during that time when myself and the editor just couldn't make this other book flow, I was on a tour in 2016 and went, you know, all across North America, Australia, England, Germany, and I would meet all these people at my workshops, and I'd published two self-published volumes before that contained some of the channels that are in this book, but early versions of them, and people would talk to me about the books, and I'd kind of forgotten about them in a way. And they would say, it's on my bedside table, I flick it open to a page. And so I suddenly just thought, well, should we go that way? Should we take some of the stuff we'd already published, re-edited it so it's very accessible and very usable, and add about 7 or 8 new chapters? And so that's what we did. And I have to say, I'm kind of shocked how nice it feels to have, A, done that and put it out there, and B, the way that people are responding to it has really blown me away, actually.
Well, I'm not surprised people keep it by their bedside, because, you know, thinking about it, you've got channels there from 2006. The thing is, truth is truth. Common sense is common sense. And, you know, whatever the Z's said all those years ago is still absolutely relevant today and will be in the future.
Yeah, and isn't it funny how it's almost more relevant today, or it's more widely understood? Because at the time, and you're really familiar with this, Sandy, because you're someone who has always been at the kind of leading edge or cutting edge of consciousness in all of your work. I think at the time, those of us that were, whether it was channels or whether it was whatever else you were doing in the spiritual arena, it did feel like new ground was being broken. And it is interesting to see how now, 10, 15 years later, much of the things that I was learning for the first time as I was delivering those messages have become much more commonplace and much more part of the world. And in fact, I think the very first time I met you was at the seminar in Los Angeles in
It was.
2008, and the chapter The Power of Women, I think The Power of Women, or one of the chapters came from that seminar. I can't remember which one now.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, channeling. You said, people are more interested maybe in hearing about this now. Certainly more people are waking up. But I think it's more a case of we can hear it now more than we could. I mean, you look at the history of channeling, Blavatsky and all of those were doing it back in the 1800s, and it was very much a niche thing then. But suddenly we're seeing many more channels coming forward, much more information being shared, and I love it that it's coming out in the younger generations as well. But I think we can hear it in a way that we never could before.
I think my it's funny because there's two things. The Z's always used to say to me back in the 2000s, they would say, when you get past 2012, you will be amazed at how visible consciousness is in the mainstream. Now, I remember hearing that and thinking, oh, sounds good, but I can't imagine it. Well, now we're in it, and you look at it, and it's, of course, not everybody necessarily identifies with consciousness or spirituality. But it's in the language. Like I will hear on either a television show or in an article, people using terms like they're normal that 15 years ago people didn't use. They will say, "Oh, it's my intuition," and now no one bats an eyelid. But 15, 20 years ago, those were still certain words that marked you out as different. And the Z's have talked about the rise in consciousness on the planet, and I always equate it to yoga. When my mom told us she was going to this thing called yoga in about 1984, I remember, I was about 8 years old and we were all like, yoga, what's that? And she would go off to this town hall and none of us knew what it was. And now you can't drive down a street without seeing a yoga center. So I think channeling's having its moment in a way where it's normalizing, not necessarily because channeling itself is important, but I think the fact that we can all connect to a higher power, a universal power, and the fact that we are energy is becoming more known in our world. And so people are less afraid of that fact. They're a little more aware of it. And like anything, I think what we grow up thinking is normal is what we will accept and collaborate in. What we grow up being told is not normal, we will have fear of, or we'll pull away from. So I'm really happy the younger generation are growing up in a much more emotionally aware world, and universal energy aware world than we ever were.
Well, I think that spirituality is becoming cool, and for those who wouldn't perhaps go that far, transformation is a much more acceptable call, I think. And that's the interesting bit. People are realizing that, we need to evolve, we need to improve ourselves. We are not okay as we have been for so long. We can tell just by looking around us, that we need to change our consciousness. And even if they do it in a very low level of transformation, that's what people, seem to be very happy to be openly seeking.
Yeah, and it's so interesting you say that because just it makes me recall a conversation with a friend just a few days ago. We were talking about, and I hear this a lot, and I'm sure you do too, people who will say, why is it mostly women at spiritual or self-development events? And what I said to them is actually, if you think of people like Tony Robbins, where perhaps not today, but certainly in the past, there is a focus on wealth, power, status within that work. Even mm-hmm. though Tony comes from a deeply spiritual place, as far as I know,
yeah.
There are identifiers within the masculine psyche and the masculine programming that make going to Tony logical.
Yes.
But I think women have always, or have historically been the guardians of women, and people with strong feminine energy or people who are LGBTQ have always been the keepers of emotion and the mystic in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like both those paradigms are collapsing now. More and more women, you know, we're seeing are balancing into power and status and money, and I don't mean that in a shadowy way. I just mean, you know, more and more women are allowed at that table, but equally more and more men are allowed to be with their feelings. And of course, I'm being gender specific here, but I think that if you take gender and sexuality out of it, it's just that we're all being able to become more multidimensional, and it's no longer as taboo or as I guess it doesn't scare people like it used to.
No, it doesn't. But some of the old, taboos, the conditioning, the conflicts are still there. I mean, I mentioned at the beginning, sex, love, money. You know, these are normal things of life. We all encounter them. I mean, my God, we wouldn't even be here without sex. Mm-hmm. But we have all this judgment and fear and shame and hypocrisy and guilt and conflict around some of these issues. Some would say sex and money, same thing. Exactly, it's the same vibration, I hear. Let's have a little chat about what the Z's say about sex and about money. Because, you know, I think when you awaken and you are endeavouring to walk a spiritual path, it becomes difficult because one thinks one has to be a little bit more conscious and a little bit more holier than thou. And we tend to take a funny attitude towards sex. You know, so many people will get so shocked if a guru or a prominent spiritual teacher, you know, if anything actually to do with sex emerges about them, you know, whether they've been caught doing something they shouldn't, etc. It's as if we become more afraid and more concerned about that, more shocked than we would with anybody else.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think the problem with anyone in that kind of position is if they allow themselves to be dehumanized. And I'm not saying that they willingly do that. I've met some spiritual teachers who do. They will let people believe that they are holier than thou, and then that can backfire on them. I would argue it's not healthy for the person who's, you know, learning from them either, because we're all human. But, you know, one of the things that the Z's say about sexual energy that kind of blew my mind when I first heard it, because it immediately made sense to me, but I'd never considered this. I think it was 2008. When the sex and sexual energy information came through. And they said, sexual energy is running through everything all the time. They said, how can it not be? It's what creates us. They said it just reaches different volume levels. So for example, when you hug a friend, there is sexual energy in that. And it's interesting to note your reaction when you hear that, because, you know, some people, and I totally get it, go, oh my God, I'm never hugging my friend again. But why do we think that? Why do we think that's a problem? And I think that part of the problem that we have, and this is certainly, you know, what I was exposed to growing up, is we have a very base energy around sexuality on the planet. And that is fed by objectification, disempowerment, all of the ways that sex has been portrayed to us. And certainly in certain religions and other cultures, there's this veil drawn over it that both intrigues people because it's not really talked about enough or shared in an open way. But what the Z's say is it's just an incredibly powerful healing force. And yet I don't ever remember as a kid or as an early adult hearing that sex was a healing force. You know, it was much more about You know, getting your rocks off, or kind of, you know, playing out fantasy, and often with somebody in the sexual act being the disempowered party. You know, you only have to look at, you know, the kind of classic pornography where, you know, the kind of, I was reading something the other day where they were saying that imagine if the pornography that we'd all been exposed to when we were younger showed two people loving each other rather than this power trip or this objectification, how differently, because I know that's where I first saw sex. You know, that was where I first learned about sex when I was a kid and in the playground. And, you know, so I think there's something to that. And I also know that we're all human and we all need to ground our energy. And I sometimes wonder if, because they're at such a high state in their work, they have to really play out the bass to balance. And I think it's, yeah, I think it's a shame. I know you and I have had conversations about some of the figures we've seen in the spiritual field who have had these kind of things come up around them. But I also feel like there's a massive healing around our sexual shadow at the moment, because of the Me Too movement and everything that's going on there. So it's an uncomfortable time, but it feels like a very necessary time around that healing.
You know, that's one of the things that I really was reminded of reading your book, is that, you know, what the Z's have to say, as timeless as it is, we need to hear again and again and again, because it really does make sense of our inconsistencies. It really does give us the tools to help us heal our hypocrisies and begin to balance the human part of ourselves with the divine aspect of us.
Yeah, you know, I saw Ianla Van... Oh, it sounds like it's break time.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with intuitive medium, transformational leader and visual artist Lee Harris. We're talking about his new book, Energy Speaks. We'll be back with more from Lee after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Namaste, friends. This is Deva Pramala Mitten. And we wanted to let you know that we will be in America and Canada this May. We'll be coming with our Wings of Mantra World Tour, coming up the West Coast to Boulder, Santa Fe, Sedona, Scottsdale, Santa Barbara, LA, Marin, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Escondido, Edmonds, and up to Canada to Victoria and Vancouver. You can find details on our website, devapramalmiten.com. Hope to see you there. Lots of love. Namaste.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Lee Harris, I hope you held on to that thought, because it was beginning to sound quite interesting.
I did. And it comes back to a conversation that you and Susie and I had on our monthly show. And we were talking about Jussie Smollett. I think it's Jussie, it's not, or is it Justin? Anyway.
I'm not sure. Well, but yes, I remember that.
We were talking about that whole thing that went down with him. So just to recap for viewers, for anyone who didn't know, he was an actor on a TV show who was accused of faking. He was accused of faking an attack on himself. Basically, it was like a publicity act. He allegedly paid two people to beat him up so that he could, so that he could garner sympathy and a pay raise on his show, which just seemed so brutal to do that kind of thing to yourself. And because he was an African American as well, it was a race attack that it was kind of shared about. So I saw Ian LeVanzant talk about that about a week after, and someone said, "What do you think about it?" And she said, if it is true and he did do that, then he needs our love. Should he needs our prayers. He needs our love, because that's a cry for help. And it's so interesting how everyone was judging, you know, and everyone wanted to condemn him or defend him. And it's interesting, Sandy, it kind of weaves back into the book. One of the things that the Z's don't have that we have as human beings is value judgments. And we make them all the time. And we've all been trained to make them. And these judgments that we make about black, white, right, wrong. And from their perspective, in the world of energy, what takes place on the planet is taking place for a reason, and is taking place for a learning, and is taking place for a healing. They don't get caught up in the minutiae of the small moment. They always see it from a bigger picture, which I get is a controversial view for some people, because, of course, then people jump on, well, you know, what about people who are murdered? That's surely not okay. They're not even saying that, but it's more, that's the perspective that they give you, taking a wider view, taking a longer view. And I thought what Ianla said about Jussie or Justin, I thought that was really powerful. And I feel like that's where we all need to be, around people's wounded behaviors or wounds.
That's where we need to be with everything. But I mean, forgiveness seems to be one of the hardest things of all, and forgiving ourselves first. I had a whole conversation based on forgiveness last week on this show. And it was an amazing conversation, and the book that accompanied it was, you know, amazing. And it was all based on, four sacred gifts, you know, from a Hopi prophecy, and the way that many indigenous peoples were saying how we learn to forgive. So what do the Z's say about forgiveness?
Well, it's funny, that's come up at various times over the years. And the one thing they talk about is that we have to be in the now with things that have happened. And so forgiveness would be required if we were living in the now. But often what happens is we arrest our development and we get stuck in a place where we either can't forgive someone else or we can't forgive ourselves. And what they say is that's an attachment to a moment in time that gets more excruciating the more your life goes on, because you're living with that wound and that limit. It's almost like an elastic band that wants to pull you back in time. And it's interesting, because I remember them, this was about 3 years ago, I had a real epiphany around forgiving someone in my life that I definitely had taken me some time. And as soon as I'd achieved that, I then had to start forgiving myself for a whole new group of people that I hadn't even seen. So forgiveness is a continuum for behaviors that either we wish others had done differently to us, or that we wish we had done better to others. So in my case, it was wishing I had been a bit more mature emotionally in certain relationships and friendships in my life, particularly around my 20s and my teens, and suddenly looking back on those times and seeing how I did the best I could, but now I would do it so differently. So I think forgiveness is really such a time-based thing, and we all tend to do the best we can, and that's what they talk about. They say you have to forgive yourself, because often we hold ourselves hostage to an imprint in time that the other person isn't even thinking about?
Do you know, I've heard and read a lot about forgiveness over the years, but the couple of words you said there had a profound effect on me. And that was, it's a now time thing. Because you're absolutely right. You know, even if we think about what that person did to us, we're taking ourselves right back into the past, aren't we? And if we can just bring ourselves into the now time, it's easier to see that that no longer, it's gone. It's over. Let it go.
And you
it's
know
no longer
what's
relevant.
Yeah, you know what's great evidence of that? I sent apology letters to a few people in my life about 7 years ago for something I had been privy to, and or some behavior, someone I was connected to who I knew had hurt them, and I was there at the time. And I wrote to them all and I said, I'm so sorry that that all went down while I was there. And, you know, and all of them wrote back to me and said, we never thought anything about you ever. And it didn't, you know, it didn't take away the fact that it had happened. And clearly it had pained me, all of that stuff that had gone on. But it was when they said that to me, I thought, wow, this is what the Z's have been trying to tell me for a long time. You know, you kind of, you have an idea in your head, and your memory of something is so different to someone else's. It's why, you know, three different kids in a family all had very different experiences about whether or not the parents were kind or not. Because not only were they different chemical reactions that each child was having with the parent, but the parent might have been completely unaware of how that child was experiencing them. But the child might have now villainized that parent and given them all these intentions, and they were so cruel to me and they must have not loved me. They may have just been completely unconscious and replaying their own patterns. So it's a really interesting topic to get into when you start going back in time. We really do only have the now.
You know, we've actually just touched on several things in the book that I had flagged to talk to you about. Forgiveness, judgment, you know, all the judgments we make about people, judgments we make about ourselves, the fear involved in that. And also, you know, a really important chapter that you wrote on receiving. And our great resistance to it.
So, you know, this isn't a story in that chapter, but this is a story that I like to tell when people speak to me about that chapter, because that's one of my favorite chapters in the book. So it's called The Art of Receiving, and there are three chapters in the book which we've put together deliberately. One is abundance, one is the art of receiving, and one is loving money. So I like to call them the abundance trilogy in the book. And the art of receiving is all about how most of us, especially people who would be listening to us right now, are really comfortable with the giving side. Doesn't mean you're the most generous person in the world. You might not think you're the most generous person in the world, but to give is generally quite comfortable. To receive, oh boy. So the example I can give you is, you go for coffee with a friend, the friend and you are picking up a coffee and a cake at the front of the counter, or maybe you're having a green juice and a lettuce leaf because you're raw and you're cleansing. And, you know, your friend says, hey, I'm going to get these. I'm going to buy these for us. Most of us respond one of three ways. You either go, oh, great, thanks so much. That's number one. Number two is, oh, okay, well, you get these and I'll get the next one, which basically means we cancel out what you're giving to me and we'll keep checks and balances and make sure that I give it back to you next time I see you. And number three is, oh, no, 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 you can't do that. No, 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 I'm going to pay for my own. Now, most people listening to this probably aren't in camp number three, but you might have been. And hey, there are some times that, you know, you have friends who you know are being overly generous and they don't really have the means. Sometimes you do stop people doing that. But many of us will identify with number two, which is the checks and balances kind. And what the Z's are saying is we really need to move into just trusting the flow of abundance, that just because that person is paying for you doesn't mean you have to not receive it or try and pay them back. You can pay it forward to someone else because money is a flow. And they say that the universe is a little like an ATM and that we all make deposits of love, energy, money in all of these places wherever we go. And we'll also make withdrawals from the universal ATM that will be given to us by other people or places, maybe things that we aren't expecting. So a way to really test this for yourself too is to see what's your receiving limit. So Sandy, if I said to you, hey Sandy, I'm taking you to Hawaii next week. We're going to go to the Four Seasons. We're going to get massages every day. It's an all-inclusive deal. I'm paying for the flights. We're flying first class. We're going Monday. You ready? Now, hopefully, Sandy, you go, yeah, great.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah, right? But most of us would probably go, oh, hang on a second, that's about $10,000. I can't accept that, you know, unless the friend is really, really rich. So it's interesting to look at your limits of what you will receive. So the coffee and the cake is a good example because most of us will receive that. But if someone wants to just give you something really big, it's why when, you know, people get given houses or win the lottery, they have a bit of an emotional breakdown because it's like a massive shift in their psychology and their emotions.
Mm, yeah, I had a friend who worked with money and the energy of money, and she still says, you know, that most of us have a six-year-old running our finances.
And we've just gone past tax day, so I bet there have been a lot of tantrums and tears for our six-year-olds in the last week or two.
Well, what, you know, I mean, how do we begin to work with these, you know, issues, and I'm sure there's a whole variety of them, that stop us from receiving? What can we do?
You know what the first thing to do is just, is honestly, awareness. One of my favorite quotes from the Z's that sticks in my mind is they say, awareness is the precursor to change. I think so many of us want change, and sometimes people get annoyed at themselves because they notice their judgmental thought or their judgmental reaction. And what the Z's say is they go, no, celebrate yourself when you see that, because you're seeing it. You know, lots of people just, and I'm one of those people, live unconsciously through those programs for many years. So if you get to a point of awareness where you notice that you just said to that friend, oh, no, you can't buy me lunch, and you catch it and it doesn't feel great in your body and you think, hang on a second, why did I block that? If your pattern is to block it, start practicing the other way, even if it feels uncomfortable at first to say yes. Or you could even say, I'm going to say yes. I'm a little uncomfortable receiving it, but yes, thank you for inviting me to move through my discomfort of receiving. So it's just all about altering the pattern. That's all. It's not a big thing. And sometimes we make it a big thing and that overwhelms us. But if we go, oh, I realize my abundance could be better this year, I'm going to do three things differently. And number one is I'm going to dare to look at my bank statements when they come in, because normally I avoid them because it scares me. Number two, I'm going to say yes when people want to buy me things as a rule. And number three, I'm going to start saving. I've hardly got any money, but I'm going to put $1 away a week so that I have this rhythm and this feeling that I'm actually saving money, and that will change my money vibration. So I think it's always the small action steps. And we need to celebrate ourselves for those, because that's us building a brand new pattern.
Mm. Do you ever find yourself, you know, when you're channeling this information and maybe you listen to it afterwards, having all of these ahas and going, duh, why didn't I think of that?
Well, you know, I suppose the funniest thing is I go back to that first 4 years when it was just me and them. Because I asked so many questions. So it's not that there's usually with, if I do like a long channel, like a 45 minute, 50 minute channel, either because I'm doing it live for a group or I'm doing it for a recording, there are always at least like three or four things that I hear that come through the channel that like ping for me. But I never think, why didn't I think of that actually? Because I know that they do. So it's like, I've got, you know, it's great. I'm like, yeah. And I also, they have such a clearer perspective because they're not in the human body. They're not in human density. And I think that's what we always have to remember. Channeling is wonderful. It's like the personal trainer that we want to be. But the fact that we're there doing the reps and leaning somewhere towards the personal trainer's physical fitness level is fantastic. We don't have to be the personal trainer unless that's our calling, just like we don't have to be an ascended being on the earth. We're supposed to be a human, and I feel that the ascension energies that we can channel help us lighten up our density, and that's our job, rather than us trying to become them.
There's one thing that I want to address, and that is in the section on money, and we're talking about you're talking about the very rich, etc., and how the need, the more they make, sometimes the need for money gets even stronger, and it doesn't fulfill them. But you say many are unknowingly attempting to replace spirituality and spiritual fulfillment with money. Mm-hmm. Just say a little bit about that before we go to break.
Well, all money does is bring us experiences. Like, at its best, money can be the currency with which we have experiences. So once you get beyond the place where, you're still trying to make all your basic needs met, money then becomes an excess. And it's like, oh, I can afford to get on a plane. I can afford to fly my friend to visit me. I can, you can give money and you can use money to do things for yourself. And so those people who are still hoarding, they are still trying to fill a hole that they haven't realized money itself can never fill. But they could use that money to either take a year off, to bring someone into their life who can help them really get in touch with what's going to light them up inside, because they've been chasing this external thing only, rather than recognizing that money is an external force. Can be a great thing and it can give you a comfortable life, but you're only ever an ambassador of money. You're never an owner of money. None of us really own money. We simply get to be ambassadors of the amounts of it that we have while we're alive.
Good way to look at it. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with intuitive medium, transformational leader, musician, and visual artist Lee Harris, and we're talking about his new book, Energy Speaks, Messages from Spirit on Living, Loving and Awakening. We'll be back with more from Lee Harris after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Lee Harris, time always flies when we get talking. and your book is so rich and so deep and covers so many topics. We're never going to get through them. So I'm going to say a few key words and I'm going to let you choose what you want to talk about, what you feel is the most important part to address in this last segment. And those key words are self-expression, boundaries, purpose, family, emotional well-being, personal power, sleep, and feminine energy and how it can heal the world. What would you most like to talk about?
Oh, it's like the Wheel of Fortune of the book.
Isn't it just? Spin away.
you know which one hit me right in the stomach was boundaries. So I'm going to trust that for some reason that's the one that we're supposed to choose.
Good.
You know, the Z's said something very early on to me. Well, actually, it was to a group. And they said, in order to really open to the world, you need to learn boundaries. And I remember, you know, there were other spiritual teachers or writings that I loved at the time that were all about be open to the world. So I was like, hang on a second, that's completely contradicting what I think we're supposed to be. But what they explained was, until you know your boundary, you cannot be that open. And that's a really interesting concept. And I think for me, as someone who now understands that I was a sensitive and an empath, as I think all of us have that to some degree, but there are some of us, I'm sure most people listening to this, who have that muscle or sense developed quite strongly, boundaries are essential. Because a lot of healers or light workers or sensitives will sometimes try and lift or heal another person or a place to their own detriment. They can forget themselves to such a high degree that they can be a really effective uplifter, healer, light bringer, love bringer. But the problem is they've forgotten themselves. So they leave their own body while trying to uplift or benefit someone else's. And I think this is very common. I think we see it. I think it's probably more common in women than men from what I see in the world. But I also think it's a real mark of a kind of healer, light worker who is still learning to own themselves. And owning ourselves is something we all really have to do. And I know that I've come a long way with that. And I didn't used to own myself very well. And I know that that gave me some magical experiences, but I know it also kind of kicked me in the butt in certain relationships that I didn't know that I was the one creating the imbalance, or for myself, I should say. So boundaries is a really important chapter and theme in the book, and actually in all disease work. And what I've learned is, once you've learned to put your boundaries down, you don't have to keep reinstating them. I think some people think that means they're going to have to be this boundaried, fierce person all their life. But I feel like I get to be a pretty open person in the world, and I know how to boundary myself more than I ever have. And I'm probably also a bit more open than I've ever been, because I know that if I need to draw myself back in, then I can. So the way to think of it is, they always say great fighters know the art of defense more than the art of attack. So a boundary is not attacking someone else, but it's knowing when to draw a line around your energy, your resources, your choices, and yourself.
That's a really important point, because it is something that you see an awful lot in the spiritual arena. And it's something that we actually, I think, discussed on our last Synchronize Your Energies when we were talking about spiritual maturity. And, you know, it's interesting how when you don't draw your boundaries, the things that arise. I remember reading a book a long time ago called The Dance of Anger. And what the psychologist was saying there is that anger, you know, usually comes from resentment. And the resentment comes from the fact that we have not drawn a boundary. Mm. And I just think that's so important. We think we're being kind. We think it's our duty. We think, you know, we should put others first. But in fact, that's probably one of the worst things we can do for ourselves and for them, ultimately.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think the way it gets characterized is when you feel sick in your stomach. You know, it's funny, I had a recent lesson of this, which was I was invited to basically participate in buying something with our friends. And it seemed like a great idea. And they were really enthusiastic about it. And it wasn't anything I was thinking about. But I suddenly realized, as we were entering into the kind of agreements and the legal sides of it all, I suddenly thought, this is not the time for me and Stephen, to my husband, to do this. this is not the right time for us to be entering into this kind of stretch. And what I realized was I had had that instinct in my body, but I had superseded it because my friends were so enthusiastic about it. It seemed logically like a good idea. So I hadn't listened to that little knot in my stomach the first day it was suggested to me. So a few weeks later, when I was backing out, I was reminded, always listen to the body, because my body knew. And there's no mistake. I mean, I needed to go through that to learn to really deepen. And again, it's nothing that might have been a disaster for us, but it just wasn't quite right. And I needed to come back to what was right for me and for us, and not just want to, if you like, please the enthusiasm of some people that I love.
How did you back out of that gracefully in a way that did not, you know, damage the relationship?
I had to be willing to disappoint them. And, you know, and that's not something I've enjoyed in my life at all. But actually, it wouldn't have been our truth. And because it was a commitment and it was something that might have tied us in for 2 years, I basically just made a phone call and I just, you know, I said, I'm really sorry, guys, but, you know, this isn't the right time for us. And I love these people dearly, and I could hear they were disappointed. But, you know, they were great because they're friends. And, you know, there was that little voice in my mind that was like, oh, could this damage the friendship?
Yeah.
And I put myself in their position and I thought, no, if it was me and someone told me it wasn't right for them to enter into this agreement within our friendship, I would be fine. I mean, I'm sure I'd be disappointed we weren't going ahead with it if I wanted to do it, but it wouldn't make me think less of them because I wouldn't want them as friends to overstretch themselves in an uncomfortable way. So, you know, that was just one example recently of me applying the lifelong lesson of boundaries, listening to myself, trusting myself, and knowing that sometimes you do have to, it's okay to say yes to something, provided you don't keep saying yes when your body keeps telling you no and you have repeated options or time where you can back out or change your mind.
It's such an important point to make there. I, you know, for years and years and years, I always believed that a promise was sacrosanct. If I made a promise, regardless of how realistic it was, I had to keep it. I had to move heaven and earth to keep it. And many, many times, you know, that was to my detriment. And I began to realize that. But I couldn't break that habit. You know, I thought I was breaking my integrity. And then I read Araya Mountain Dreamer's book, The Invitation. And in that book, she said something about she had been, I think she'd been married to a man who was an alcoholic and a violent one. And she kept saying, but I made a promise. I made, you know, promise to love, honour and obey through everything, and I can't leave him. And someone said to her one day, what about the promise to yourself? And that for me was the turning point, because I actually realised the promise to yourself has to be greater than your promise to anyone else.
So true. And if you are giving energy or something to someone else that doesn't quite feel right to you, you can bet that they're not alchemizing it. That's what the Z's would say a lot to me. They would say, you've just given 100% of your energy for 3 hours and now you're tired, and they can alchemize about 10 to 20% of that. But they would let you keep giving the energy because they'll take whatever you're giving. And that was a hard lesson for me to learn. And I think this is where judgments come in. We judge the other person. We're like, oh, how could they behave that way to us? How could they not see that I was tired? And really what you should be saying is, how could I behave that way towards myself? How could I not see that I was overextending? Because really, we've only got ourselves. And that's trust me, I have been in the victim position of certain relationships and experiences. And it's very hard to hear that when you're in that healing crisis moment. But it is the truth. Like, the more you live your life and you go through life, you realize you're the only one that's with you all the time. And you're the only one that is really having the experience that you're experiencing. Even the people you are closest to, they are not having exactly the same experience hanging out with you on a Sunday that you are with them. Now, you might both come away and go, ah, oh, that was one of the best Sundays we've ever spent together and that I've had all year. And you're completely in sync on that. But you both experienced it slightly differently. And so it's really important to know who you are and to learn who you are. And I think many of us who are empaths and sensitives, I know for me, learning about my own self-identity was a long journey. And I mean, of course it continues, but for a long time, I don't think I was inhabiting myself. I think I was inhabiting energy, and I was inhabiting the energy of other people. I was inhabit, you know, and it took me a long time to really land in my body.
And we also, and you know, this goes back to personal power, we also inhabit the expectations of others and the expectations that have been put upon us by our parents, you know, the unspoken agreements, the judgments and evaluations that are made about us. You know, you're that kind of person, so we think we've always got to be that kind of person.
Yes, and isn't that funny, like when people say, oh, Sandy was so out of character on Sunday, but how can Sandy be out of character? Because we don't know who Sandy's going to be. Like, you could turn around tomorrow, Sandy, and, you know, be somebody completely different to who we've known so far. And so I think those kinds of statements hold us in place. And, you know, I don't want to talk about politics, but it just hit me as you were saying that. I thought, well, you know, with what happened in the last election, it's interesting, isn't it, the election in the US, although it's kind of going on all over the world, there aren't more revolutions. And I know there are murmurings of revolution and there are things that people are unhappy about, but it's because we're so trained into this system. You know, it's like people going, oh, there's no point voting because it doesn't make any difference anyway. But if that wasn't what we were thinking, then the system would still be alive. And rather than this somewhat dead system that we've kind of living in. And I do think that's changing. I'm not saying that to be doom and gloom, but I think that's another example of how we're all of us to some degree as human beings are living on rails. And the thing that I've found in my spiritual journey and so far is you can actually bring a lot more life to your life if you keep being curious and trying to open beyond the rails. So I'm glad to see that's happening in society at large. And I think that we have a personal responsibility and gift that we get to examine ourselves as we go through life and see what aspects of ourselves we can open up to bring more color, more life into not just our world, but then what we become an example of for others.
Yeah, absolutely. Lee, we have about 1 minute left. I just want to read something that someone wrote about your book. They said each page of this book, whether focused on money, relationships, abundance and manifestation, angels and spirit guides, or any other important life topic, is really a reminder that we do co-create with the universe. I want your last words to us to be something about that particular statement.
Well, that's lovely. You know, the words that come to me are, you are love, and your life is remembering that. And we do all love. I don't mean romantic love. I mean that feeling of presence, connection, flow, and that's what we're here to uncover every day. And it doesn't mean we'll feel it all the time, but it does mean that can be where we aim our internal compass. So you are love is what I would like to say last.
Wow, yeah. And I think too, the other thing about that you said that I really like is that we can either be asleep in co-creation or we can be active in it. And it's our choice.
It is. And I'm a big believer in setting intention and then taking action to back that intention up.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly glad that you set the intention to produce this book and you backed it up.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And Sandy, thanks for giving me in the book this hour. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you to everyone who tuned in.
My pleasure. Lee Harris, thank you very much indeed. Till the next time, which will be next week.
It will. With Susie. Great.
With
Take
Susie.
Care, everyone.
Thanks, Lee. Energy Speaks, Messages from Spirit on Living, Loving and Awakening, which comes highly recommended by many in the transformational movement, is published by New World Library. Whatever it is that you're struggling with right now, I promise you, open that book and you will find some real down-to-earth practical common sense and some invaluable tools to help you deal with it. That's it for tonight. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thank you for joining me today. And I look forward to being with you at the same time next week for Synchronize Your Energies with Susie Miller and Lee Harris. Till then, it's goodbye from me.